Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Spectral Revelations, A Carina Cardinal Mystery, by Ellen Butler. Narrated by Madeline Mabee. Prologue. Monday. The dumpster reeked of sulfurous rotten eggs, decomposing vegetables, and remnants of the restaurant's catch of the day. She pinched her nose, regretting the choice of a hiding place. Peeking around the fetid trash, she watchfully awaited her mark. He'd have to come out sooner or later. There was a waxing gibbous moon tonight, but the scuttling dark clouds covered any sort of light it may have provided. Due to town ordinances, the limited lights in the parking lot barely spread their glow farther than 5 or 6 feet. The flickering light he'd parked beneath flashed bright one last time and went dark. It didn't matter. His white SUV sat like a beacon in the empty lot. Finally, she heard the squeak of the back door swinging open. The car beeped and the taillights blinked. He walked rapidly, carrying something in his left hand. His head swiveled back and forth, scanning the empty lot. Silently, she pulled out of sight, going so far as to cover her mouth, even though she wasn't close enough for him to hear her breaths. The car door closed with a quiet clunk. She waited for the telltale sounds of an engine revving to life. Instead, she heard the back door creak again and poked her head out in time to watch it close behind him. He'd forgotten to lock the vehicle. She pulled the sweatshirt hood over her head and darted across the lot to the SUV. A small brown box sat on the passenger seat. In a trice, she had the box in her hands. The vehicle's dim overhead light revealed a flash of shiny metal. The scrape of a shoe and a skittering stone were her only warnings. She pivoted. "Surprised to see me?" Chapter 1. Wednesday. The cell phone sitting on the conference table sang out "Benny and the Jets" by Elton John. My mother's face popped up on the screen. I rolled my eyes in irritation before sending the call to voicemail and turned back to my computer. "Did you just send your mom to voicemail? Again?" my coworker Rodrigo asked. "Yes." He frowned, and I, for some reason, felt the need to defend my actions. I checked the clock on my laptop, which read 4:20. 10 minutes to finish this presentation before the team meeting. I don't have time to go down a rabbit hole with Mom right now. I worked as a lobbyist at the National Healthcare Advocacy Alliance. We had a 4:30 meeting with our boss, Hasina, to review the strategy for our latest healthcare initiative with the Urban Health League. Rodrigo shook his dark head and dusted off an invisible piece of lint from his beautifully tailored gray silk suit. I readied myself for a lecture. He didn't disappoint me. If I did that to my mother, she'd lecture me for the next 3 weeks and threaten me with her chanclas. What's a chanclas? Did you finish the diabetes data on Atlanta and Chicago? I asked, tapping away on my laptop. I'm referencing it on the last page of my report. Already sent it out in an email to the team. He leaned back in his chair, stretching his arms above his head. His Puerto Rican skin tone remained tan, even though it was October. Not every man could pull off the lavender button-down with the bright green and black tie he wore. He was in his mid-20s, and his beautiful wardrobe would have been on point in New York City. Unfortunately, he was a unicorn amongst the bland Washington, D.C. wonks. Chanclas are sandals, or flip-flops. I know you took Spanish in high school. Do you remember none of it? He gently chided. If you recall from our trip to Mexico, I can order cerveza y piña coladas and ask where the bathrooms are. By the time I hit Spanish 3, I was so lost. My teacher took pity on me. The C she gave me was due to the extra credit research project she granted me, not because I actually earned the grade with knowledge of the language. I finished the final bullet point on my conclusions and started a grammar and spell check. Why would your mom threaten you with a flip-flop?
It's a Latin thing. Italians threaten their kid with a wooden spoon. Latinas with a flip-flop.
I chuckled and corrected a spelling error caught by the computer. Spell check finished, I emailed it to the team and closed my laptop. Done.
Right on time.
Rodrigo scooped up his computer and his afternoon pumpkin spice latte. We headed to the elevators.
You doing anything interesting this weekend?
I pressed the up button and sighed. Rick and I are having dinner with Mike and his new girl. He bit his lip to hold back a smile.
That should be interesting. What I wouldn't give to be a fly on the wall. Dinner with your boyfriend, your ex-boyfriend, and his new girlfriend.
You could consider Rodrigo my work husband. He was as familiar with the men in my life as my sister or mother. Possibly even more so since we'd had the unfortunate luck of experiencing not one, but two escapades together. His fluent Spanish had come in handy during our Mexico caper. When I'd been a suspect in the death of a senator, Rodrigo doggedly helped me pursue a lead that law enforcement dismissed. It wasn't either of our faults that the assassin turned the tables, chasing us up Interstate 95 with a dead woman in the trunk of his car, intent on adding us to his pile of victims. Not wanting to give Rodrigo fodder, I responded, "I don't know what you're talking about. It's not like I've never met her before. Minlin is a perfectly charming woman." An engineer for Lockheed Martin, Minlin was all things I wasn't. Petite, with straight black hair that hung at her jawline and serious dark eyes. I had wavy, long chestnut hair, emotional green eyes, and stood a solid 5'9" in bare feet. I was fairly certain Minlin's closet held only three colors: black, gray, and shades of beige. Like Rodrigo, I enjoyed colorful fashions, especially when it came to shoes. I might have had an addiction. "Hello, my name is Karina Cardinal, and I'm a shoeaholic." Rodrigo followed me onto the elevator, giving a distinct snort to my description of Minlin. "What? She's perfectly fine. Erudite and staid." Rodrigo pressed number 8, and it lit up.
"Last week at happy hour, I believe you compared her to a zucchini."
I rolled my eyes and said dismissively, "I remember we did shots to celebrate a win for Jennifer, but I don't recall saying anything like that."
"To quote, she has the sense of humor of a zucchini. When you look up the word serious in the dictionary, there is a photo of Min Lin."
Rodrigo used air quotes to emphasize my comments. Good Lord, how many shots did I have? In Mike's defense, considering the shenanigans my adventures put him through, perhaps a zucchini is exactly what he needs. The elevator opened and our discussion ceased as we slipped into seats around the half-full conference room table. The rest of the team filed in, 7 in all. Finally, our boss Hasina strode through the door, her thick, low-heeled pumps clacking against the faux wood laminate floors. She wore a mustard pantsuit that hung limp and wrinkled off her waif-thin figure. Neither the suit cut nor the color did anything for Hasina's olive skin tones. Gossip around the office had it that Hasina was in the midst of a messy divorce. The sleepless nights had deepened and spread natural dark circles beneath her eyes. Hasina was a good person and a good boss, and I pitied her current predicament. She placed a 4-inch stack of files topped by her computer, cell phone, and cup of coffee at the head of the table. "Are we all here?" In response, Elton John cried out, "Benny and the Jets." My face flamed, and I quickly fumbled to swipe the call to voicemail. "Sorry, I'm putting it on silent now." Everyone at the table pulled out their phones and switched the ringers off. "No problem." Hasina took a moment to turn her phone off. "That wasn't Kathy from the Urban Health League, was it?" "No,
I shook my head. It's her mom calling, Rodrigo piped up. Again.
Is it important? Do you need to call her back? Hasina asked in a concerned tone.
It's nothing important. It can wait until after the meeting, I assured her.
Hasina plopped into the chair with a slight sigh.
Karina, as team lead, you have the floor.
An hour later, the meeting broke up.
Good job.
Hasina loaded her materials back into a pile, sans a coffee cup this time. Instead, she tossed it into the trash can.
Are you attending Senator Whelan's fundraiser tonight?
Along with Rodrigo.
I nodded toward the door my coworker was exiting.
Will you be there?
I might stop by. It starts at 7?
Yes, but the senator won't arrive before 8.
I planned to go home and change first, then get there about a quarter till, I replied absently. Another voicemail notification popped up on my cell. That would make 3 from my mom, along with a text from my sister Jillian, which read, Call Mom.
Perhaps I'll see you there.
Hasina gathered her belongings and headed out the door.
Yes, see you.
What on earth is going on? I returned to my office, closed the door, and phoned my mom without listening to the voicemails first.
Hello? Is that you, Karina? Mom answered.
Hi, Mom, it's me. I saw you called a few times. I was in a meeting with my boss. What's going on?
Have you heard from Aunt Vera?
Aunt Vera?
I sat in my office chair and spun around to look out the window.
No, I haven't spoken to her since June when Jillian and I went down to visit for her birthday.
Why? Aunt Vera was my mother's first cousin, not her sister, making Vera my first cousin once removed. This was explained to me when I had a family tree project during 7th grade. I never forgot it. However, because she was of my mother's generation, we grew up calling her aunt rather than cousin. Mom always said Aunt Vera was the sister she never had.
She was supposed to call me back about Thanksgiving and our girls' trip in February.
Every year, Mom and Vera took a girls' trip to someplace warm. It started when I was a junior in high school. Arizona spas, Florida beaches, and cruises to the Bahamas were just a few adventures the two had taken.
We're cruising to Jamaica this time. I've got to book it this weekend if I want to get the discount on the room upgrade, she said in a rush.
Mentally, I rolled my eyes. Mom was known as the family planner, never satisfied until events were arranged down to the last detail. Mom and Dad were coming east for Thanksgiving, while my brother Tyler and his family would be attending Thanksgiving in Oregon at his in-law's home. As far as Thanksgiving is concerned, Jillian and I have already discussed it. You and Dad can stay at my condo, and Aunt Vera can stay at Jillian's apartment. Turkey dinner is at my place. Tell Aunt Vera she's in charge of bringing her famous chocolate pecan pie. I'll get the whipped cream. I rattled off directions without pausing. See? Planning done. No worries.
That is precisely what I'm trying to explain. I can't tell Aunt Vera. I've been calling her since Monday night.
Mom's tone sounded a bit frayed about the edges.
She knows we've got to book this trip ASAP. She hasn't returned any of my calls.
Well, that was odd. Aunt Vera usually returned a call within 24 hours, or at least sent a text.
Maybe her phone is on the fritz? Did you try her at work?
Yes, I called the main number and I was passed to her boss. He said she sent a text to him. She requested time off to take care of her sick niece in D.C.
My brows furrowed in confusion.
What?
Exactly. Jilly's not sick. Are you?
No, of course not. I swung back around to my desk and opened my laptop.
I'm stumped.
The boss must have gotten it wrong. I'll shoot her an email in case her phone is busted or lost.
I pulled up my Outlook, added Vera's private and work email addresses to the to line, and typed up a quick message asking if she was okay. I requested she reach out to Mom or myself.
Did you send a text? I asked Mom.
Of course,
she snapped as if I'd asked a stupid question.
In my defense, the question was not stupid. My mother was not of the texting generation, and she was 10 times more likely to make a phone call than send a text. I rarely received texts from her. When I did, it usually told me to call her.
If Aunt Vera hasn't been to work this week, where is she? I murmured, immediately regretting speaking the words aloud.
I don't know, Mom cried with a bit of a whine.
I didn't need my mother working herself into a dither. I knew I'd have to calm her down or she'd be on the next flight from Colorado to Virginia.
My parents moved out of the D.C. rat race a number of years ago when my mother retired from teaching. My father still did consulting for the federal government. They chose Colorado because it was in between their children. My brother lived in Seattle, whereas Jillian and I lived in the 51st state of Northern Virginia, a place vastly different from the rest of the state. I'll tell you what, if Aunt Vera doesn't contact one of us by tomorrow, I'll go down on Friday. Hasina's given the staff the afternoon off because the building is being fumigated.
Fumigated? Mom exclaimed.
The old coffee shop on the first floor wasn't cleaned properly before they closed for good, and the roaches moved in. My lip curled in disgust.
Ew.
My thoughts exactly. The critters haven't made it to the upper floors, but businesses on the first and second floors have been complaining. So, we're all getting gassed. The building must be cleared out by noon. I shook my head. Anyway, it doesn't matter. We've gone off on a tangent. I'll touch base tomorrow evening. If you haven't heard from Vera, I'll buzz down to Williamsburg to check on her.
Do you think I should call the police for a welfare check? After all, she's 62. Maybe she had a heart attack.
I hesitated. You can always do that, but the fact she told her boss she'd be out of town leads me to believe something else is going on. Perhaps she's found a new man and flew to Vegas to elope. I slapped a hand over my mouth, regretting the statement as soon as it popped out.
Good Lord, I hope not. It would be that horrid Randy all over again, Mom moaned.
Aunt Vera's first husband, Uncle Jack, was an awesome guy. The type of uncle who would swoop a kid up on his shoulders to look over the crowd at Disney World. I remember marveling at his ability to pull quarters from my ears. Uncle Jack died from a brain aneurysm when Vera was only 46. Returning home from work one evening, the poor woman literally stumbled over him lying on the bathroom floor. A year later, still in mourning and on the rebound, Vera married Good Time Randy. Good Time Randy loved to party and drink and spend money. Within 8 months, Good Time Randy blew through all their savings on lavish purchases, expensive trips, and bad investments on stock tips he'd gotten from a bar buddy. I could never confirm it, but I believed my parents lent my aunt the money for her divorce. Vera had been working for the Smithsonian. After the divorce, she moved away from D.C. and restarted her life in Williamsburg, Virginia, where she became a conservator at an art museum. I'm sure there is a perfectly sensible explanation for everything, I soothed. Don't worry. Later that night, I tried to take my own advice. Oft easier said than done. Wandering around the senator's fundraiser, networking, and nursing a single glass of wine, I found myself distracted by thoughts of Aunt Vera. I constantly refreshed my email. Nothing. What's that saying about a watched pot? With a sigh, I decided to leave my email app alone and focus on the task at hand, getting a co-sponsor for our bill. Chapter 2. Thursday. Benny and the Jets woke me from a stressful dream. Everyone has had it. I was back in high school. I couldn't remember my locker combination. There was a test I needed to study for. My notes and textbook were in the locker. Mom, I rolled onto my back, rubbing a hand down my face. What's wrong?
Have you heard from Aunt Vera yet? She whispered.
What? I don't know. What time is it?
Morning time?
Cripes, I muttered. Just a sec, let me check. I swiped to my email app. No response.
No, not yet. But I sent the email in the evening. I checked the clock on my bedside table. 6 in the morning.
A realization dinged in my head. Which means it's 4 in Colorado. What are you doing up at this ungodly hour?
I woke up to go to the bathroom and figured you'd be awake.
That would explain the echoey sound I heard and why she was whispering.
Geez, Mom, seriously, I think you're blowing this all out of proportion. I'm sure Aunt Vera is fine. Go back to bed.
I thought you woke up at 6.
Not when I didn't get home from a fundraiser until midnight, I grunted.
Oh, sorry. Go back to bed. I'll call you at lunchtime.
I hit the off button and tossed the phone back on the table. If I could just get another half hour of sleep.
15 minutes later, the coffee machine belched out its magical dark brew as I hovered impatiently for it to finish. I poured in some pumpkin spice creamer, took the cup and phone to my velvet sofa, and surfed social media. At 6:45, the Mission Impossible theme sang out, and my boyfriend Rick Donovan's smiling face lit up my phone. I swiped the green answer button. Hello?
Morning, beautiful.
His yummy deep voice rumbled across the lines, giving me a warm, gooey feeling in the pit of my stomach. Or it might have been the coffee. Tough to say this early in the morning.
Saw you on social and knew you were up. Are you coherent? Have you had your coffee yet?
Rick was a veteran who did time in Afghanistan. The military discipline of rising at the ungodly hour of 5 in the morning stayed with him. So it didn't surprise me that he was up, coherent, and had probably already run 3 miles. Rick had learned that I was not in his early morning league. Before 7 in the morning, I could run as far as the bathroom. Seriously, if you saw me running at 5 in the morning, you'd better run too, because something was undoubtedly chasing me. Just finishing my first cup.
How did the fundraiser go?
It looks like the 4 of us, Rodrigo, me, Hasina, and Kathy from Urban Health, were able to convince the senator to co-sponsor our bill. I may have given a bit of a squeal at the end of that sentence.
Congratulations, that's great.
So far, so good. We've got a bill in the House and the Senate. 1 step closer. I swallowed the dregs of the coffee and scrunched my nose in distaste. It had gone cold.
I was calling about our dinner with Mike. Should I make reservations for us somewhere? It is Friday night, the weekend before Halloween. Things might be a bit loony.
Crap, I'd forgotten about the dinner. About that. I'm going to reschedule.
Okay, fine by me, but why?
I gave a put-upon grunt. There's a possibility I'll need to go down to Williamsburg tomorrow.
Spill. What's going on?
Why do you think anything is going on? I shot back.
I can hear it in your voice, he said evenly.
I sighed in defeat. Rick was former military special forces, as was most of his team. Their security clearances made them perfect to run on and off the books operations for CIA/DEA/FBI. Add your own 3-lettered government agency here. At least, those were my suspicions. Honestly, I knew stuff about Rick, like his family life and where he grew up, but whenever I asked questions about his job, I didn't get a lot of answers. That being said, I was certain Rick was trained in interrogation tactics, as well as asset development. I couldn't put much past him. Mike once said Rick knew how to handle me. I'd resented the hell out of that remark. But, to my consternation, Mike may have hit the nail on the head. I rolled out the Aunt Vera story, starting with my mom's phone call yesterday and ending with, so far, Aunt Vera hasn't returned any calls or my email.
Is that unusual?
To be honest, yes. Yes, it is. He took a beat.
Do you want my opinion?
Unlike most people, Rick was truly asking and would abide by my answer. If I said no, he'd leave it alone. I couldn't say no. Actually, I valued his take on the situation. Yes.
I think you should send the cops over for a welfare check. Like your mom said, she's 62, lives alone, and hasn't responded to your mom's queries, or yours, for that matter.
My mouth twisted because I agreed with Rick's assessment. I'd been thinking the same thing as the coffee kicked in. I'll phone the police as soon as we get off. If I go down tomorrow, would you like to join me? The leaves are at their peak. It'll be a beautiful drive down.
What time would you go?
Noonish. I explained the fumigation situation.
I'm starting a new security detail for a foreign diplomat tomorrow morning, and I'm meeting with a potential client at 3, so that's a non-starter. I could come down on Saturday, he offered.
What a sweetie. This time I was sure the gooey feeling in the pit of my stomach was Rick and not the coffee. No worries. Let's play it by ear. If I get down to Aunt Vera's and find she's simply lost her phone, I'll likely return sometime on Saturday.
Will I see you tonight?
I hesitated, bringing up my calendar app to see if we had something on the books. You mean for self-defense practice? I'd been taking self-defense from the Silverthorn guys on and off for over a year. I don't see anything. Did I have an appointment?
Karina, we haven't seen each other in 2 weeks. Since I'm not seeing you on Friday as planned, I thought perhaps we could get together before you leave for Williamsburg. You know, for dinner or something, he said in a wink-wink tone.
As head of Silverthorn Security, Rick worked all over the world providing security services for American businesses abroad, foreign diplomats in D.C., and various other missions that tended to remain hush-hush. In a way, dating Rick wasn't much different from dating my ex-boyfriend Mike. The one main difference, I knew my ex, who worked in the FBI's cybercrime unit, wasn't walking into active war zones. I did my level best to put those types of worries out of my head. Otherwise, I'd go bananas. I snuggled deeper into my robe and said in my most sensual voice, "Why, yes, Mr. Donovan, I'd love to get together for dinner. Or something."
"Pick you up at 7?
"Let's meet at Southside in Old Town, 6:30. We'll come back to my place afterward for dessert." I licked my lips.
"Can't wait," he said matter-of-factly. "It's after 7. Don't you need to get a shower?"
Crap! I launched off the couch, dropping the phone in the process. "I've got an 8:30 breakfast on the hill. See you tonight," I hollered. His sexy laughter was the last thing I heard before hanging up. Luckily, I'd brought home a pile of dry cleaning yesterday, which gave me abundant fresh-pressed clothes to choose from. So I left the condo with plenty of time to get to my meeting. In the car, I phoned the Williamsburg police station and requested a welfare check for Aunt Vera. They took all my information, Aunt Vera's information, and said they'd be in touch. Later that morning, as I was driving away from Capitol Hill back to the office, a lady by the name of Madge contacted me. "Our officers obtained entry with the landlord and did not find your aunt in residence. They checked the parking area and did not find her vehicle on the premises."
"I see. Thank you, Madge. I appreciate it."
"No problem."
She hung up, and I debated whether to contact Mom. I decided to wait until lunch, as we'd originally agreed. Maybe Aunt Vera would respond to my email before then. Chapter 3. I walked through the front door of Southside 815 in Old Town Alexandria and breathed in the scent of comfort food. The restaurant specialized in southern cuisine that included homemade buttermilk biscuits, barbecue, fish, shrimp, and a variety of fried items from chicken to green tomatoes. Rick stood at the bar with a half-empty glass of beer in front of him. He wore a pair of black jeans, a French blue button-down shirt, and a black leather jacket.
His hair was close-cropped with an edging of gray at his temples, which...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?